This week on the Bamfcast. Come on, y'all, let's take a ride. There's lots of old cars with drugs inside. One star, we're in.
All right, welcome to the Bamfcast.
Hey!
Hey!
Bamfcast.
Bamfcast.
It's a podcast.
Episode numbers.
519.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. It's a... Yeah.
Episode enough.
Episode penultimate.
Mostly, yes.
Yeah.
On the proper numbering scale, yes.
Penultimate episode number. Yeah.
Short of the next one, which will be a mailbag.
It doesn't have a...
It will not be 600.
Right.
Pre-penultimate.
So, get your emails and your voicemails in if you want them. This is your last call, literally.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm the second to last Harlow.
I'm Mackie.
I'm BJ.
And what we do each and every episode of this here podcast, we go and watch ourselves a quote-unquote bad movie and come here and talk about it. Then good bad movies, enjoyable bad movies. They get 1 to 5 jocks and robot jocks.
That is a terrific
I mean,
bad
if they're
movie.
Deserving it, but you know, there's a negative sliding scale, 1 to 5 bags and giant bags of trash that the bad movies go into.
Yeah. See?
Yeah, boo.
Boo. That's just, no.
It's a shame, really.
Probably not going to be an issue
we prefer
from
them.
Here on out. I mean, that's our goal.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
One more episode and we won't have to worry about any of it.
Right. Yeah.
And then it's night forever.
Yeah. Yeah, we put it all in a bag.
Right.
And we
kick
throw it, in
kick
the
it right in the jocks. Yeah. Yeah. So, we are doing our farewell tour, saying goodbye to some of our favorites, both metaphorically and not so much sometimes. But yeah, we are handling 2000's China Strike Force, starring one. Well, okay, I would say starring, even though he's got the with credit, which is sort of like the Judi Dench credit.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
But I'm sorry, Dame Judi Dench. My apologies. But yeah, Mark Dacascos is here. And I'm just missing March. No, he's here for March Dacascos. Sorry.
Yeah, it is currently March.
It is currently March Dacascos.
As of recording,
yes. And also, we are testing one last time the Coolio principle.
Yep.
Coolio as Coolio.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are a lot of characters in this who are going by their first name.
Starring Coolio as Coolio as Tony Danza.
Mm-hmm.
The boss.
Yeah.
He's not the boss.
Directed by Stanley Tong.
Yes. Director of Rumble in the Bronx.
I'm Stanley
Super Cop, I believe.
Tong.
Yes. I think Super Cop 2 as well. I'm not positive on that.
Well, that gets confusing.
I wouldn't
like,
feel like looking it up.
It's because, like, yeah, it's a Super Cop.
Oh, First cause Strike?
Because, like, yeah, Super Cop is actually, what, Police Story 4? It's confusing.
Yeah, Super Cop 2 is the one with Michelle Yeoh. Yeah. And then there's Police Story 3, Super Cop. That's the one he did.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. I'm just saying it's confusing because they're actually like renamed police stories, I think.
Yeah. You know. But I mean, Rumble in the Bronx.
Right.
That's all you really need to know.
Arguably my favorite. I mean, what I would say is it's my favorite Jackie Chan movie. I don't know if I'm going to go as that's the best. It's my favorite. I can't say anything more than that. I can infinitely watch that movie. Yeah. That's all there is to it. I mean, like I said, I love so many others, but that one is just one I could put on literally every morning and be happy.
Mm-hmm. Just wake up and have a great day.
Yeah, just like put it on the automatic alarm clock. Just wake up to rumble. It's time, ready to rumble.
Wake up, you know, the...
There you go.
Yeah.
There,
oh, Jackson. Sorry, I just got sued.
Oh, no.
I just got sued. Anywho. But yeah, any other... No, not really. No one else of note shows. I mean, you know, people that we're trying to revisit, there are other people in the movie, clearly.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the two main guys are Aaron Kwok and Liam Wong. Both pretty damn good martial artists.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Stanley Tong. I mean, I don't know these guys' affiliation. You know, I don't know how many Kevin Bacon's away they are from like Jackie Chan's stunt team, or if they're actually just part of it. But
probably are.
Yeah, they're hella talented. Is all I can say. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that one guy, I wouldn't doubt it if the shorter guy is his... I mean, I guess I shouldn't say Jackie Chan's stunt double, but one of his doubles, because Jackie Chan does so many of his own stunts.
Yeah,
it's almost like, does he... Like, this is the guy who does the really fucked up shit.
Man, like, I want to be... First job I want to do is Jackie Chan's stunt double. Second job, Tom Cruise's stunt double.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when you say that, you know, you kind of know what you're in for with this, in that... There is a solid chance people almost died on this movie.
Oh, for sure.
There's a real good chance because we watched the little outtakes at the end.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Watched several people almost. I mean, actually, there are several shots in the movie where.
Yeah, one in the movie, we were all like, oh, my God.
Yeah, that man had a family.
Yeah.
He doesn't, or they don't have a family member anymore. I guess his family didn't die on that.
Event. Yeah, and I'm not going to spoil the rating or anything, but like this type of thing is 100% our shit. With the at least as far as the stunts go, let's put it that way. Like,
correct.
Like anything stunt wise that happens in this movie is getting us like out of our seats cheering. Like we rewound multiple scenes. We're just like, wait, let's watch that again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're still here early.
Yeah,
this is a brisk movie, and it moves. I guess. I mean, I'm trying to think of like the
There's
most,
not much plot.
Yeah, I was going to say the most concise way to sum up the plot. All right. I think I could do this fairly easily so that okay. we could just talk about the cool scenes and not mm-hmm. like get lost in the minutiae of mm-hmm. the doubles and triples and all that cross.
Yeah.
We have two main cops. Those are the titular China Strike Force, I guess. No one's ever calls them that or
no.
It's just a movie title. They're both hotshot cops. It starts with a training montage. One of them, they get sent to another city to investigate something, and their contact is the police chief there, who is one of their fiance's father.
Yes.
So that just sort of starts a connection there. On the other side, you have a criminal, like it's kind of like your classic Godfather 2 situation. Because you have like old gangster who's basically like, no drugs, we do crime and protection money and all that stuff, but no drugs. runs the community. And younger guy's like, all the money we're losing on drugs, come on. And that's Mark DeCascos.
Yep.
So they're basically pushing drugs, I mean, on the head of the family. Yeah. Coolio is basically the American partner who is like, I run the drugs, I will bring them to China and we will do this.
Coolio playing the character Coolio.
Mm-hmm. Is he playing the character Coolio, or is
that is his title in
I
the
guess
movie.
He's not as himself.
His name is yeah. Coolio.
Maybe so he's actually himself, and the idea is that like the whole musical thing is a front, and that he's actually built a secret drug empire behind the scenes.
Well, it didn't say Coolio as himself, so
oh
yeah,
it is
Coolio playing. You're right. It's Coolio playing the character Coolio,
which is very disorienting at certain points in the movie because they'll suddenly be like, "Hey, we got to catch Coolio."
So this is more
and we're like, "Wait, are they joking? Yeah. Are they saying that ironically?" And it's like, "No, the character's name
I thought
is Coolio."
Perhaps they flubbed it. Sort of like, I mean, a lot of people think that the end of Star Wars, he yells out Carrie.
Yeah,
and then they're like, "Oh, just leave it. He's just happy."
Yeah.
Can't redub that.
Yeah.
it's on there forever.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess it's sort of like John Malkovich and being John Malkovich, or Nicolas Cage and that movie he made for
something.
It's
like
a version
that,
of himself or a
he's playing the character Coolio, who in this movie is Coolio, the international drug lord.
Who may or may not be from Chicago or Los Angeles. Yes. I'm not sure. I think he said something about the South Side of Chicago, and then it was like it was South Central, and I was like, that's two different places.
Yeah. He also could get used to this shit. That's his catchphrase.
It is.
Man, I could get used to this shit.
He says it a lot.
He does walk
every
into
time,
a lot of places they walk into.
Every time he enters a scene, it's, yeah. Man, I could get used to this shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of the basic plot. And then... the cops kind of get involved because like
there's hot girl.
Yes, there is a Japanese. I mean, she's a they call her from Japanese Interpol, which I don't think is
she's
a thing.
From the Japanese branch of Interpol. Yeah.
Okay, I'll
let's
go
with
that.
Yeah.
Sure.
The dialogue isn't masterful in
case
this,
you don't
nor
know.
Is it good?
Interpol is just international police.
Right.
Generally, doesn't belong to any one country. Right. That's the idea. It's sort of like the NATO or the UN of policing.
Right.
Yeah,
but anyway, she's
with that said,
she is pretending to be a bad guy,
right?
And it kind of goes back and forth like eight times.
And some people, maybe Coolio or Mark DeCascos or whomever, are trying to pick off some of the old man's like heads of his table or whatever, so to make him give in to the drug thing. I don't know why that guy was murdered at the fashion show, to be honest with you. I don't think anyone really ever came forward and took credit for that, per se.
Give us an awesome... Coolio does.
Does he? Okay, yes. All right.
But he does kind of awesome chase scene.
Yeah, he does kind of walk out of there very nonchalantly, like, yeah, I planned this. But yes, there is a fashion show where the cops and the criminals kind of sort of happenstance together because they're not really there chasing this whole thing until they witness a murder.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, otherwise, it's a lot of scenes of Mark Dacascos and Coolio, with Coolio going, I could get used to this shit. Mm-hmm.
And then monologuing about drugs and or how cool this shit is.
Yeah.
some racist shit.
And then Mark Dacascos.
Them countering with some racist shit.
Yeah, and then Mark Dacascos basically saying, just hold on, we'll talk my uncle into it soon.
Yeah, Mark Dacascos throughout this whole movie is like, no, we got to take it slow. We'll get there. We just have to ease into it.
We'll get there fast, but we'll take it slow.
Yeah. Yes. And we'll say early on, he is established firmly as a bad guy because they are smuggling drugs. They come upon an accident in the rain, and they are in a truck that says it's medical supplies. So, of course, the cops go, hey, we got to help this guy. Do you guys have any you guys have medical supplies? And he's like, nope, we're empty. He's like, not even a first aid kit. Come on, man. And so they, of course, open the back. It says medical supplies. He says, I didn't say there were medical supplies. I just said we didn't have any. And shoots him. And then sees the mom holding the baby, crying over the man that needed medical supplies.
In the rain.
In the rain. And he promptly shoots all three of them.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You don't see them drop, but...
I kind of forgot about that part. I forgot that they made him that evil and then never... And then sort of walked it back where he's just jovial with Coolio for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that opening scene where he was super evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when you establish a man killing a mother and a defenseless mother and baby, this is not like little kid, toddler. This is like cannot crawl away baby.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Murders him.
Yeah, I mean, it's says like no witnesses. It's in like breastfeeding position. I mean, it's you know, it's an infant.
Yeah. Not anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's a bad guy. Coolio is just establishes a piece of shit pretty much from the beginning, though a piece of shit with some great outfits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, featured. I mean, if you're watching the live stream, his signature hat is kind of like a wide brim fedora with the hat or the top cut off so that his braids can come through.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's a very Coolio hat, and I appreciate it.
Yep. He even has a song on the soundtrack.
Two,
really?
Actually, three. He has two that are solo.
Isn't there one with Smash Mouth?
Yes, there are two solo ones, and then Smash Mouth featuring Coolio is on the soundtrack. Yeah, so enjoy 2000.
We live in amazing times, don't we?
We lived in amazing times.
Yeah.
This was 24
years
ago.
We just didn't know that we were walking on the sun.
Yeah.
Might as well be.
All right, so yeah. Yeah, like you said, the opening training montage is a fake out.
Yeah.
It's an excuse for to show that, okay, we're going to be doing some wire foo here, but not a lot.
I mean, honestly, I think that this scene is a great fake out in more than one way, because this scene is also terribly lit and the rest of the movie is lit just fine.
I think it makes you go, oh man, everything else looks awesome. Because
you're like, oh man, they didn't light any of this action. And then every other scene is lit.
It's also weirdly edited because it feels like they cut the impact shot. They cut a split second too early. And then they cut a split second too late into the reaction or whatever. So, like, you know, a guy will get kicked through a door and you'll see them jump up and almost kick. And then all of a sudden you've got like the guy coming through the door in a way that doesn't flow the way most good fight scenes do.
They're cutting around them pulling punches because it's a training.
Yeah,
exercise.
It's also entirely possible. I mean, look, I
could have been a third unit director.
Well, I was going to say, or, you know, for all we know, they had hired some other person.
Yeah, it's all the other. Yeah,
and then this was like the first day shooting, and they're like, oh, whatever, we'll use it. just put it in there to be a training montage, and you make your own movie after.
Yeah,
who knows?
Yeah, but we learn it's a fake out because ninjas show up at the end and shoot one of them, but it's with a paintball gun,
mm-hmm.
and that's how we learn.
Yeah, so like I said, most of this is just them slowly getting to. It's not Shanghai. What is it? Chenglong? It's Chelong or something like that. It's I don't know. I'm not familiar with the city.
I don't remember. I just know that the fashion show they go to is in Shanghai.
Right.
And like you said, it's purely coincidental that they're there.
Yeah, they don't start off chasing Mark Dacascos and Coolio. It just happens that they get on the trail because of this murder at a fashion show.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they see the mob boss guy sitting at the same table. One of them gets chased to the Japanese Interpol agent, which say Interpol agent? How about that'd be a lot easier? And who happens to be Japanese?
It's Norika, yeah. By the way.
And then someone else gives chase to the murderer guy, which, you know, is a crazy chase involving a motorcycle and an F1 car.
Well, I mean, the way that one guy gets it, though, is rough. Because he gets a skewer through the neck, like, from mm-hmm. the side.
Yeah. And somehow it manages to give off a very, like crazy scream, too. Like, it's hey, everyone, I'm getting murdered here scream. I mean, most of the time in movies, it's a very, like, oh, or they just fall over dead, you know, immediately. This is like a... Like, I have a spike in my neck.
The guy, he does, I mean, that's probably how I'd react if I got spiked, if I got skewered through the neck.
If I was physically able to, yes, if it had, like, pierced the things able to make noises, sure, yes.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking your neck is probably filling up with blood at that point, hard to make blood curling.
And what happened is, and at this point we don't know what Norika's deal is, but she, other than she's hot.
Yeah.
And she steals a floppy disk that's in his jacket.
I don't think we even realized the floppy the first time. I think she just reaches and grabs something, and then we see it's a floppy. Oh, did you notice?
Yeah, I saw she tucks the floppy in her in her dress, and I was like,
"Is that a floppy?" He tucks the floppy in with her knackers.
Yeah. It bothered me because, like, the dress she's wearing, it's like, ain't no hiding a floppy in that sucker.
Right.
Yeah. So... Either way, that's the only reason.
Outside
I knew.
Of
yeah.
it either.
Right.
No. Plenty of hard drives outside.
Yeah, because she gets out, and then the one agent, I don't remember which is which, but the taller agent, let's just say that he ends up chasing her because
Alex is the orphan, right?
I think so. Yeah. Let me, Alex, and then the other one's Darren. So yeah, Alex chases her outside and basically she just takes a cab and he just takes a motorbike from someone and follows her.
Right.
And then his whole thing, and this is intercut between the chase that Darren has, where he's chasing the actual murderer.
Mm-hmm.
Alex is resolved real quick. They get to the hotel. He basically threatens a guy at the counter and he's like, "I'm a cop. You need to tell me what room she went to." Goes up there. They get in a brief fight where we get to see that she can fight.
I want
to
roll it back 1 second, only because this bellman or whatever is like the opposite version of the Pee Wee Herman cameo in Pee Wee's Big Adventure. Like, they have cast this guy and then dubbed him with this, like, "Hey, what do you want?" voice. Mm-hmm. It is so bizarre. It's just like the opposite of like paging Mr. Herman.
A couple of those happen in this movie. It's very weird.
Yeah. But either way, he gets up there. We briefly see that she could fight because as they're about to handcuff her, she does a spin around. She's able to chuck a few dudes. And she grabs Alex's tie, tightens it around his neck, and then runs over the balcony with the both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, he basically grabs on with his legs.
But it's the people who have to grab him.
The other cops grab him. And she uses that to swing herself into the level below and get away.
So fucking cool.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it looks cool as shit. Because she just does it from his tie, which never tears. So it was
quality silk.
It was a good silk tie.
It was double stitch.
Yeah. So that scene, this is intercut with Darren chasing down the murderer, who they run through this busy street, and this dude gets hit by two cars.
Yeah.
Like, straight up, this stuntman got hit by two cars.
Like, breaks one of the windshields as he slides off of one of them, yeah.
Yeah, and then they're just running, and cars are just swerving away from them, and it's one of those scenes that's in Hong Kong films where you're like, fuck, man, fuck.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, did they tell anyone on the road or is this just random people?
Yeah. Is this all guerrilla footage? Holy God.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the guy ends up getting in the back of a pickup truck. He's able to run fast enough to hop in the back of the pickup truck. And from here, our guy decides he's able to get into that truck. But then this guy jumps onto the car next to him. And then jumps off the roof of that car onto a bus.
Yeah, like a tour bus with like an open deck.
And let's keep in mind, this shit's moving.
Mm-hmm.
All of it.
Yep.
Moving and not moving slow. And it's not like, oh, we shot that. They moved half speed and we sped up the footage. No. These guys are fucking jumping between goddamn cars that are going at least 30 miles an hour. I would guess.
And 30 doesn't sound very fast, but 30 on a moving car is way faster.
Yeah, until you realize that Usain Bolt runs at like 11 miles per hour at like his top speed.
Yeah, it's like 24, but
yeah.
You know.
But yeah, so this guy jumps from one car onto the hood, onto the roof, jumps onto a bus and is scaling the bus. Our guy has to jump out, gets a motorbike, and then fucking ramps himself onto one of the cars. Like basically pops a wheelie and is able to pull himself onto the top of some little, not a bus, but it's like a little minivan type thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which also happens to have a little ramp on the top of it for a sign.
Right.
And so he uses that to goddamn ramp himself up onto the top of the bus. All the while, both of these vehicles are moving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even if they're moving 10 miles an hour, that's still... A, yeah. Terrifying, and B, yeah. Impressive as fuck.
I mean, the gravity-defying climb up the van is a little silly, but it is, it's
but
also
who fucking
awesome.
Cares?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, rule of cool, yeah. Right there.
Yeah, and I mean, the other one is, you know, at least they didn't go for the, you know, he launches off of it somehow. At least it's like the bike stops and the forward momentum carries him,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Inertia.
And then they have this goddamn fist fight on top, like, kung fu fight, crazy shit on top of this bus.
Mm-hmm. Now, wait, was this not the chase that involved the F1 car? Does he get... Oh, yeah,
that's
he gets,
later.
Yeah, he gets knocked off the bus. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's a completely different scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, the dude gets knocked off the bus and gets hit by another car until he gets to a bridge, and then they corner him, and he basically chooses to jump off the bridge to get away. And it works because that guy shows up later.
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah, I guess he did survive, yeah.
Yeah. Even though that looked like a very long drop.
Maybe he dropped a stone or something ahead of time.
That doesn't work. Yeah. Don't try
he didn't
that.
Have a grenade launcher to shoot at it.
Grenade
X style.
Don't do that, kids. Don't think that works. Just don't jump off of bridges. It's dangerous.
Yeah, and don't go chasing waterfalls either.
Right. Don't tug on Superman's cape.
Mm-hmm.
It does, like, the whole bridge jumping thing seems like a really bad way to go.
Especially, like, when you hit a rock that you couldn't see and your knees go... like directly into your brain through the rest of your body.
Yeah. Or just hitting the water hard enough to kill you. No.
To send your legs through your body.
Yeah. But if you survive that, then you're basically drowning.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like just.
And
just,
if you survive that, then, you know,
brain
the
dead.
Rest of your life is really uncomfortable.
Yeah. Like, just don't do that. Like, life's cool.
A BMF PSA.
Yeah.
Don't fuck it up.
Just, like,
you could probably jump off like a county road bridge, like one of those things that's like 5 feet off the water. But I mean, I still probably don't recommend it.
No.
Yeah, but like, you know.
That would probably still hurt.
Yeah. I'm just like, just probably there are better places to jump into water than from bridges. Probably just across the board.
Save up your money. Yeah. Go to Mexico. Yeah. Jump into a cenote.
Yeah. It's pretty sweet. I got to admit. But anyway, like this guy gets away.
Right.
By jumping off a bridge that he should not have survived, but he does. And from here, that's when they're trying to track down what the hell happened. And their chief is not pleased with how everything went because they weren't even really on the job. They were just there, like, checking out.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, I don't think they were there.
No, they,
in
yeah, they were literally there
capacity.
Just to meet the fiance and introduce her. I don't know. I don't know why they had to meet.
Yeah, because his fiance is a model.
No, she's the designer.
Oh, she was the designer? Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. Yep. So basically, she made bikinis for all these chicks. And
yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Sweet. Mm-hmm. I like her already. Yeah. But from here, that's when they go to the small town of wherever, where we are told by the designer woman's father, the one guy's future father-in-law, that guy isn't a big deal in Shanghai, but here in this town, he is a huge deal. And that you can't just go in and start asking him questions. So he takes them to the boss, who's not pleased that his dude got killed and nobody has any leads about what the fuck happened.
Right.
But then the cops show up and he's just like, they're like, do you know anything about? And he goes, no. And just kind of stares them down. And then the one guy like tries to interrogate him. Or he says something like, you know about who was that woman at the table with you? And then he just goes, you may now leave peacefully.
Yeah. It was like there was a little pause before peacefully.
Yeah.
It was a good threat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But and then they get outside and the police chief's just laughing at him. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, you see what I'm talking about?
This dude's kind of kind of odd. I mean, I'm just saying, like, his general overall behavior is a little strange.
The boss?
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
I mean, yeah, of
course. Well, and the thing is, like, they do that, and then they're like, yeah, so we got no leads. He's like, well, actually, there's probably... I've heard there's something going down at the docks later today. So you may want to check that out. And they're like, okay, why didn't you say that first? And so they go to the docks, and this is where, you know, Mark Dacascos, who is, like we said, has been doing the Godfather 2 thing, and being like, how about those drugs? Mm-hmm. A lot of money in drugs. And so he's basically just going around the old man's back to work with Coolio at this point. Right. So he's taking shipment of Lamborghini Countach, as well as a bunch of beater old Fords that suck.
But are full of drugs.
Yeah, but they're full of drugs.
Yeah, I guess we find that out later. But
we do find out later, because they seize the shipment, and the shipment's like a lot of, we learn later, it's like old, like this 2000, so it's like a lot of VCRs and other stuff like that, electronics. And
I'm curious, and this doesn't have to be like a major, I mean, I know we don't have a lot of time for people to respond to this, but we were having a pre-show discussion about The Princess Bride and how you came to it late, and I understand this is diverging slightly, but I am curious if, I mean, I understand that like most people were born after us, and it's increasing number as it goes on, but if you weren't born where you would idolize the Lamborghini Countach, is it cool or fucking ugly? Like, I'm wondering, because like to us, it was the idolization of like badass, hot, nasty speed.
Yeah, basically anyone in Gen X is like, fuck yes, yeah. Lamborghini, man.
Right, that is like the coolest car that has ever existed.
It persisted long enough for at least folks around my age to also idolize it. Like,
but you're like, you have a couple years. I'm talking like, I'm talking like someone like Steve, like the bird.
Who's, well, no, like, I'm just saying like it's not very young exclusive man to Gen X, because sure. I'm technically the oldest, the world's oldest millennial.
Yeah, you were right at that cutoff.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I remember downloading a non-animated GIF from a bulletin board of a white Countach, and had it like as my wallpaper.
How did that whole thing start when you connected?
What's that? Oh, Dumby Dumber D?
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Dumby Dumber. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, Dumby Dumber. Like a modem.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Like a modem. And I looked that GIF up later, because the only thing I could remember is it was called Magikar.gif.
Magic.
And that is how I found that, was searching for Magikar.
Single C at the
single
end?
Single C.
Okay, yeah. I was just curious if, like...
Yeah.
We're all typing it furiously. Yeah, Magikar.gif?
Yep.
Give me the Lamborghini. It gave me a Magikarp at first.
Hmm.
Yeah, but it's that Countach right there.
Yeah, if you play long enough, that Countach will become a Gyarados.
Yeah.
Man.
A gear. Yeah. Is that the hottest fucking car in the world? Yes.
I just made a Pokemon's joke. I'm
it's
old.
Got those big old scoops on. Yeah.
Everything about the Countach is fucking great.
I do wonder if like, you know, a child looks at it now and is like, looks like a Cybertruck.
Yeah, kind of sucks. I kind of think it, because it's like, it's super angular now, and I'm like, I'm wondering if it's just like, it's hideous to people nowadays. I think
if I run into any youths, I'll save Magikar.gif to my telephone.
I will say that like as time goes on, that car holds a lot less. I think it's because I've ridden in one in my life now, and I understand how awful they actually are. Like, it is
For 1982, it wasn't awful.
They absolutely were. No, they still were. The engine is...
All cars were awful.
The engine was, like, in your neck.
Yeah, that's where you want it.
Yeah, you want to feel that power.
I'm just saying, like, you're sitting there, right, and it's just like... Neck. It's right there. It's awful. Anyway, I just... My feelings on it have softened over time, and I just...
You're fired.
Sure. Watching this, still fucking love it, man.
Okay, yeah.
And it was Sunstreaker, so...
Okay.
There's that.
All right.
But, he takes delivery of one of those. And as they bust everything, you know what's about to happen. Mark Dacascos is going to take off in that fucking car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, this is where he gets chased with okay.
Yeah, but not before one of them, I think it's Darren again, like, avoids getting hit by basically jumping on top of it. Because, I mean, this is one of those things, like, it's in the outtakes, too, where there's, like, a fishtail, like a J-turn type thing.
Right.
Into a crowd, and the one guy has to kind of like jump it.
Yeah.
But the timing is off a few times and you're just like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. Yeah. This whole sequence with the Countach and eventually it's about to be an F1 car join the fray too is just basically like 17 deaths of James Dean rolled into one scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, that's an ancient reference for anyone that doesn't know how he died.
Well,
yeah.
If there's a semi, they're going to try and drive between it. Right. You know, it's basically, it's going to get perpendicular to them, and they're going to try and go underneath it. And, this happens multiple times. Like, they're going through basically a cargo, like a loading docks area. And there's like one of those nets full of just shit hanging there. And they're trying to get the guy off by driving under these things, so he has to keep ducking underneath all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And I know it's the way they film it, but like they've got kind of like the camera low on the hood, facing back on the guy hanging back on it, and it's just like you look at that shit go by, you're like, God damn.
Yeah.
God damn, that's close. Yeah, every time. But the way it ends is the guy realizes that the semi they're about to go under is too low. So he stands up and jumps and basically slams into the side of the semi-truck, the trailer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is not stunt, CG, anything. This is a dude on the back of a car that's going at a fairly good clip.
I mean, the best...
Slamming into the side of this fucking
The best we can
trailer.
Hope is that they, you know, at least replace so that it was like rubber on the side or something, you know, but
right.
But yes, I mean, at the very least, we saw what happens when an unstoppable force meets an immovable object.
Yeah.
it looked like it hurt a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy got jacked. And the thing is, he jumps up. So he lands, you know, a good 8 feet up on the thing and then kind of like falls from there onto the ground and just kind of rolls. But he's like, I got to chase this guy. And the only car around is a goddamn F1 car.
Yeah, I don't really understand why they're servicing F1 cars here, but when life gives you an F1 car, say Alan Z.
Once again, rule of cool.
Right, yeah.
Hey, F1, let's do a car chase with an F1.
And also, they're in the middle of China in this small city or wherever they are. And also, it's an entire team of French mechanics with this car. Like, sacré bleu, what is all? Sure, why not? Yeah.
Yeah. So, we get another car chase. This time, a Lambo being chased by a goddamn F1 car.
Mm-hmm.
But he also has some kind of truck. Like a box truck that I guess those guys were working with him because he tells them to keep blocking the F1 car.
Right.
And I think we all knew where this was going. And at some point, he National Lampoon's Christmas Vacations it.
Yep. Like 18-wheeler is going down the road with a, you know, trailer on the back. And an F1 car is going in between the trailer on either side.
Yeah.
And also just driving there for an extended period of time. And all the while, my toes nearly broke because they were curled so hard.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the thing is, he keeps jumping out to the, like, he can't see, and the guys can't see him, and he keeps bumping out to the left.
Yeah.
Not the right, which would be open. He keeps going to the left into incoming, oncoming traffic, and he's like, nope, swerves back. Does this a lot.
Yeah.
More than I am comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And finally is able to get out and gun it and get past them. And is about to catch up, but I guess I can't quite tell if I'm probably confusing the cut footage with what happens in the movie.
I feel like the semi truck jackknifes for some reason.
Yeah, it like jackknifes way ahead of the Lamborghini.
Right, and then it seemed like he was on the way to like, you know, some kind of free jack crash. Sorry for that weird reference, but I just like it just seemed like he was about to be in some kind of horrible wreck, and then they just sort of cut away, and because he was like, oh, for half a second, and then he's just like, okay later.
Well, yeah, DeCascos gets underneath it. It does shave the spoiler off.
Yeah, spoilers.
Yeah. And but this is why he eventually has to Darren eventually has to stop the vehicle, and he and they slide it, and he just goes, he has to duck down because the top of it hits like the end corner of the semi trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which would have ripped his head off.
Sure.
But yes. So Mark DeCascos gets away, but it's a good scene.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, as all the stuff we were saying early on, like, oh, it was poorly lit and, you know, and edited weird. None of that here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
All this shit looks great.
I feel like that was also like a teaser of like, oh, you're about to see a, you know, maybe it was, it honestly may have been like a creative decision because of the era of movies that we were in. Mm-hmm. I mean, that straight to video, like, you know, like super like shit ass editing that we were going through. And it was just like, let me make the beginning of this movie wrong so I can show you it'll look more cool when it's right later on.
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know, but all this stuff. Awesome. From here, I don't know, man. The chick shows back up to, like, Coolio and Mark Dacascos hang out a lot.
Yeah, they're in, like, a Turkish bath at some point.
Yeah, and the chick shows up and throws him the disc and says, hey, I want in on this.
Mm-hmm. Which apparently they had to do, like, 87 times, like the package scene in Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, there's, like, 8 outtakes of him just trying to catch that floppy disc in that. But yeah, that Coolio's like, I don't trust her. You know, she's wearing a wire.
She's wearing a wire.
Yeah, thing. So she does a weird, like, I'm going to strip, but not for the camera thing. Mm-hmm. And then it's just like, they're like, all right, well, we're on board with you now because titties. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well,
she's proving she's not wearing a wire. Yeah. And that she's willing to show off her yabos.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the thing about Coolio in this movie as well. Is basically anything is an excuse to talk loud and sound kind of angry about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Even though it doesn't necessarily, like, the conversation doesn't flow that way.
Not at all.
Yeah. But it's kind of like, that's the speed. Coolio either has, man, this is cool as shit, or, hey, this isn't right and I'm angry about it. And those are the two faces of Coolio.
I feel like he wants to hit that side that Ice-T has that he just doesn't. That like I can flip on the angry and sell it. And I'm sorry, I just don't buy it from Coolio. Never did really. So
yeah.
I mean, like when Ice-T flips on that switch in those movies, you're like, fuck yeah, scary guy. Like you could fuck me up. I don't feel that way about Coolio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though Coolio arguably probably was more dangerous.
Probably. I mean, he's probably like a foot and a half taller. I think Ice-T's like a little fella.
Yeah.
I think he is.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah.
No. But so this establishes her as being on their side, I guess. But then the next scene is him basically deciding, Dacascos deciding, all right, Uncle's not going to give in because we've already had him meet with Coolio, who says, hey, this Zen garden here is cool as shit. I need to get me one of these. And then the uncle's like, yeah, how about you just go back to the US and sell your drugs there, buddy? And that's when Mark Dacascos is basically like, let's accelerate things. Because at first it sounds like he wants to wait for the uncle to die. And Coolio's like, no, I know these guys. He's going to sit in this garden and we're going to be waiting 20 years and it's not going to happen. So Dacascos decides it is time to stab.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a weird stealth scene. Like the dude's chanting, you know.
Mm-hmm. He's doing his Buddhist prayers.
Yeah, and he just sneaks in and stabs him with what looks like a giant foil. I mean, it looks like a weird round sword. I don't like a poker. I don't know. Yeah.
Like a rapier or.
Sure, something. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But I think he means because.
Yeah, and immediately she comes in and tries to, like, it does the thing like where she comes to finds the body and then tries to like pull the sword out. But of course the cops show up at that moment and she has literal blood on her hands.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we find out that
if we're only going to give you two pro tips for this, this episode, the first one of course is don't jump off of any bridges, no matter the height.
Don't do it.
And the second is if you, you come across a dead body, especially one that appears to have been murdered.
Don't touch it. God,
just don't touch it. I mean, now, if it's alive and it's asking for help, that's a different story. Touch it then. But otherwise, what are you going to do?
Well, I mean, if it's alive and asking for help, it's not a dead body. So
well, that too. I mean, I'm saying...
It disqualifies
it. Well, I mean, if you're walking along and you're like, oh, God, dead body, and then it's like, help me. You're like, oh, okay, all right, well, you know, disregard rule.
Right.
It's, you know, I'm just giving the whole Asimov set of rules here.
It immediately becomes not a dead body as soon as it goes.
Sure, sure, yeah.
But anyway.
Is that what it does? It goes, oh.
Yeah.
I feel happy.
Get this katana out of me.
Get this katana out of me.
I believe this knife is yours.
You've fallen for my trap.
Oh, it's like a dagger I see before me.
Call an ambulance, but not for me.
The old rope-a-dope.
Unk's dead. They're free to do the drugs.
And she's arrested.
Yeah, and also at some point he has clued him in that his whole drug mule process is that they're going to dump the drugs offshore, load them into a pipeline, and pick them up. I don't know, however many hundreds of kilometers, miles off the shore.
And I like it. It's
and,
good
like, and like 4 minutes later, so yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Because at some point, Alex is preparing to propose to his girlfriend. After the car chase bust, and we're like, oh, Alex is so dead.
Yeah, they had a dinner first where he's like, here's the ring, I'm going to ask her later tonight, and we're like, oh man, and then he goes like, man, it's just wish your parents were here, and I'm like, but I'm confused. He's going to die because he has a fiance, but he also has orphan vision. So which one's going to win?
I know.
Well, spoilers. It's the fiance. All I'm saying is like, if you're going to get married, do it quick.
I also,
or don't be a cop.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Those are your two choices.
Well, if you are a cop and you get, like, engaged, you just, like.
Yeah.
Don't get engaged. Well, go straight to marriage.
Yeah, you know judges. Like, literally just go find one and have them marry you, like, because otherwise you're walking a tightrope.
Directly to marriage.
Life and death.
I do love that Darren is just, like, okay, that's cool. However, I think I figured out where the drugs are.
Right.
So why don't we go do that instead? And I was like, no, I think I'm going to propose to my girlfriend tonight. Thanks. And then he goes, oh, yeah, I forgot. It's like, Darren, how good a friend are you, man?
It does seem that they're actually setting Alex up to get killed, you know, going off and investigating the junkyard
or
impound lot by himself.
Yeah.
Alex is the one Alex is the one getting married. Yeah,
Darren's the...
Okay. The single man.
Kind of a loose cannon.
Right.
But he finds the drugs, and then they're like, all right, we got all the drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Good job.
Yeah, they were sneaking them in old Fords.
Yep. Why would someone use old Fords? He figured it out.
Yeah.
And then, he calls Alex on the night that he's getting engaged. He's like, hey, found the drugs. Why don't you come down to the precinct now? Which he does.
Yeah. Yeah, he interrupts his Montel Jordan time to go down there and deal with the drugs, which is just, that is not how you do it.
No.
It actually was Montel Jordan's life, too.
But anyway, so from here, she's arrested. She's in jail. Darren figures out, you know what? She's a cop. Run her prints. And yes, that's where we learn she's with Japanese Interpol. She's been trying to chase down Coolio, who had killed her partner.
Mm-hmm. And then assume the identity of Coolio.
Yes. And from here, we have a weird scene where Darren fantasizes about, like, she's stretching in prison.
She's doing yoga in
and somehow tweaks something, and so he has to massage her inner thigh higher and higher.
Mm-hmm.
At her request.
Right.
And then starts making out with her.
It's basically a Dear Penthouse come to life.
Yeah.
And then he snaps out of it. I mean, because, yeah.
Yeah, and then he snaps, but it gives us a chance to mention the music in this movie.
Sure.
Which sucks.
Okay.
It's really bad.
Yeah, I mean,
and
pretty
totally,
much all of it, because I mean, we're talking about licensed music too, but I mean,
yeah,
it's
but
all
it's like really,
it's all over the place.
Well, and it's also it's so aggressively obvious about what it's doing each time, like when the Interpol chick has to strip to show she's not wearing a wire, it like kicks in with the porno music, and then like the second she's done, they just shut off, like it just stops.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not like there's no transition, there's no none of that. And it's the same thing with this.
It's basically the score version of like the Suicide Squad needle drop on the nose thing, but you know, someone actually sat down and made original shit for it.
Yeah.
I mean, there are needle drop songs in this, mostly several Coolio songs and the Montel Jordan thing I mentioned, but I mean, and the one of the Coolio songs, I think the first time we're introduced to him at the fashion show is, I mean,
yeah, it's something about girls.
I'm not saying, you know, there's like a lot of Coolio songs that are straight classics, but this is particularly bad.
Oh, it's bad. Yeah.
Yeah,
there are like, only three I Coolio like songs anyone knows, and there's a reason everyone only knows three of them.
Right.
Yeah. We've been spending most of our lives trying to forget that this one exists.
And one of them is due to Stevie Wonder doing the entire thing aside from the rap for that song.
Hmm.
But anyway. So yeah, he has this fantasy about making out with her and she's like, nah, fuck you, when he wakes up and actually gets to talk to
they
her.
They have a weird, you know, it's like moonlighting condensed down to 10 minutes. Cause like 1 second she's like, hey stud. And the next she's like, get away from me. You suck.
Yeah.
And it's just like, all right, this is their dynamic.
It also seems odd that like they've found out that she's an Interpol agent and yet they're still like keeping her in a cell. You know, it seems weird.
Sure.
But yeah, but basically they let her go.
It's not a hotel. I mean, there's a bed there. I don't know.
It just seems odd would imprison her despite knowing who she is at that point. But anyway. Yeah. But they let her out and she this is where we get
I think it was part of the plan. Because they were like,
oh,
we're going to lock you up overnight. We're going to call in a fake lawyer and then release you. And then, you know,
you hate cops. Your cover. Yeah. Okay, so, you're right.
Yeah,
but you did mention the outfit that they put her in when they let her leave.
The silken or the silky Velma.
They silken Velma.
Yeah, they like we always talk about a silken Goku, but this is like a silky Velma because it's like this super flowy, super orange Velma top, but it's but with like sex appeal, I guess.
Yeah,
mild sex appeal. I mean, if you're super into silk, I guess.
What's funny is it works when she shows up later in it.
Sure.
Because this leads us to our final sequence, pretty much, where they're at, it's somewhere in China that's like one of those huge, temple.
Almost like the Forbidden City, but like a smaller version of it.
Yeah. You know, but I mean, it's a big open area.
A big Chinese castle.
It probably was an old, emperors. I mean, because there were multiple emperors in multiple parts of China and also, dynasties and things. So it probably was a palace at some point.
Yeah. But it's like this giant walled palace. And, they've got the giant chair that Coolio, of course, has to sit in.
Mm-hmm.
But as he and Mark Dacascos are talking, you see in the background her storming in her orange outfit. And being like, what the fuck? Who set me up?
Yeah.
And they're like, and Coolio's like, I did because I needed to find out that you were. You know, that you were good and it was a test and you passed. And
he gives Coolio a yellow and or like a golden purple and red Bentley, I think, or Rolls.
It's a Lakers colors Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always say Bentley, but I mean Rolls. It's like for some reason my brain says the wrong thing.
Once you get in that price range,
it's a nice ass car with a hood ornament. So,
Yep. I guess the guys are there because they know that's where she went. But our good guys have shown up. And also, as they're about to leave in the helicopter, they go back in for some reason. And she's like, how about a toast before you head out?
Yeah, there are several things that happen at the end here that, A, were never really foreshadowed at all.
Yeah.
Of all the things dropping at the end, turns out that the future father-in-law sheriff of this
being
place
on the take.
Yeah, he's on the take and has been the entire time. It was slightly hinted at, maybe, other than like I've seen a movie.
The one scene where he's threatening the one dude to throw him out the window.
Sure, that was supposed to be.
I guess.
Was it? I mean, I just thought they were like looking for answers.
Yeah, it's played kind of ambiguously. Yeah.
But anyway, he walks in at one point and is like, I'm out. I'm going to retire from the police. I'm going to retire from you. I want money, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to expose her for a cut of your giant stake in money.
Yeah.
And that's basically like how he outs her and how he basically is dealt with. Because, of course, that starts a shootout. But
yeah,
like
because he tells he gives her up. And then Coolio is like, all right, then I'm going to shoot you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the other two guys are like, fuck, man. And so one of them, like Darren is chasing down multiple guys, like one of the henchmen, and Alex is kind of stuck in the gunfight with Mark Dacascos. And she is basically kung fu fighting with Coolio.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Coolio's stuntman.
Right. Yeah, yeah. At some point in this movie, it turns out like even Coolio knows kung fu in this and joins it.
This is the first time we've seen it,
right?
Because at least Mark Dacascos, like, that's the thing, is he has not done any stunts aside from like one sparring match with his henchmen that in the middle of the movie,
which was badass because like they were going at full contact, full speed. Other than like, you know, there was a very clear whiff of a foot at the end, but I mean, like, I'm pretty sure their punches were legit. Like, they were actually just going full contact.
Yeah,
but. But yeah, so it was like at least hinted that he had some training in, but yeah, Kung Fulio just breaks out of nowhere at the end, and, you know, kip ups and everything. I mean, it's just like he's crazy good.
He's got a sweet stunt guy. Yeah. I'll say that.
But yeah, the
match is better than a lot that I've seen.
Yeah, right. He really did.
Just realized, like, okay, so I think before the temple scene, I think Alex bites it before that, doesn't he? Because like they get to the temple and he's. Nope.
It's during the temple scene.
It's during the temple scene.
Yeah, it's right out. It's basically like the father-in-law gets shot like four times.
Right.
Yeah, like he gets clipped in the very first time.
Sure.
And then the next time he he gets shot again, and then Coolio ends up fucking executing him.
Yeah,
basically.
he's trying to drag. Yeah, that's right. He's trying to drag his future father-in-law behind a pillar, and Coolio's just there, like perpendicular to him, and just. Lights him up. Yeah, that's right. I forgot.
Yeah, and we'll just say there's some badass fight scenes. Just random, like that. Like Darren ends up taking on the blonde henchman that Dacascos had been sparring with earlier.
Right.
Like in the cocaine lab.
Mm-hmm.
And he does this one move that we had to rewind. Like, I know it's a wire move, but it's just like he gets this jump up and he gets the swing with one direction with the one leg,
mm-hmm.
and then just comes around with the other one and just cracks the dude in the head.
The only thing I can think of that this is similar to, and God, it's such a bad example because it's not a great movie, but it's that Jet Li movie, Black Mask. Mm-hmm. He does a move like this in a hall or a alleyway.
Yep.
Where he kicks one dude and then kicks the other dude the other direction.
Yeah.
And then just like lands all super cool. And it's, you know, clearly wire shit from back then. But I mean, it's like, it's, this looks much more like actual. Like it doesn't look scream wire work like that Black Mask thing did.
Yeah.
The only part of this that's a little bit weird is they cut right before the last move. Or they cut to a different angle, I guess,
mm-hmm.
for the last move. So it doesn't look super smooth.
Yeah.
But the actual kick itself,
you're like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So even though there's supposed to be one move, even taken as two moves, they're in fucking incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So good.
A lot of gun battle stuff. A lot of fighting and.
Yeah, and then it's like it kind of gets upped. Like, this is a badass move, and then it kind of gets upped because before Alex is about to be shot by Coolio,
mm-hmm.
they start double fighting. Like,
yeah,
like the ones on the ground, sort of like in a almost like a gymnastics, like, you know, like. Launch position sort of thing, like cheerleading.
Like, put your feet on mine.
Yeah, like cheerleading or Jabberwockies or whatever, where they like do a move like, here, launch off of me. And it's like, yeah, but he's instead like launching them back towards Mark Dacascos to like bounce off the walls and shit. I mean, it's cool.
And he's doing some flips. And it's like,
it's badass.
It looks awesome.
Yeah.
But then he's like, I got to go help father-in-law.
Right.
Why don't you, like, you take him on. And this is basically just Darren and Dacascos just going at it for a bit. Until the henchman shows up, the blonde one, and is able to, I think he shoots Alex like in the hip, kind of
something like that.
Or no, he shoots he somehow clips Darren while he's fighting Dacascos, but it doesn't really affect him at all. It looked like it hit him in the hip. It's weird.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a graze or something, just enough to affect him.
But he has to dive for cover, and so Alex goes, well, fuck, man. We're in an old fortress. So he grabs a goddamn spear and just fucking impales that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Just chucks the spear and murders that dude.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing is like, I know that it used to be much more prevalently used, weapon. But we don't see too many spears thrown at people. And like, you know, there's something about that, like, big giant stick of wood partially sticking through a human. That's just kind of satisfying.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
Spears are a objectively better weapon than just about anything else.
Sure.
But he does that. And then he runs over to the father-in-law, the police chief, and is trying to drag him behind the pillar. And Coolio just kind of just shows up and shoots him.
Yeah. And then Coolio basically, like, you know, they have to have the whole like, no, don't die and tell my fiance I love her. Well, Coolio's basically like, cheese it, it's the cops. I'm going to go take the helicopter.
Yeah.
And now they have rigged the cargo net to the bottom of the helicopter to drag this Lakers Rolls Royce under the helicopter.
Yeah.
Now, Coolio's on board basically like, and the idea was like, they're all going to get away on the helicopter. I guess someone else was going to drive Mark DeCascos's Countach for him because they were just going to take Coolio's car to the docks and he's going home or whatever. But so he's like, all right, leave Mark DeCascos and everybody else, like, take off now.
Mm-hmm.
While they're having the, oh God, my partner's dying moment, I guess Mark DeCascos decides, like, I'm also going to get away. So, like, the helicopter's already, like...
The cops have shown up outside, finally.
Yeah, the helicopter's already starting to take off, so, like, all the henchmen that are left are basically, like, climbing onto this car/cargo net under this helicopter, including...
Cargo net.
Yeah.
including cargo net, cargo up.
Yeah, including Mark DeCascos. So, like, it kind of becomes, like, a slightly, like, a Mission Impossible Fallout situation where you got a bunch of dudes hanging on this cargo net under a helicopter for a while.
Yeah.
And... It turns out, I guess it is really his final shot. Like, Mark DeCascos is hanging on the front of this.
Well, it's somehow she's able to jump off a cop car and get on there as well onto the net.
She jumps off, like,
and
her stunt is really good.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other guy is able to, or Darren's able to get on too.
Oh, yeah. I guess we should back up.
Got adrenaline fury.
Yeah, she's all the way up at the top of the tipple, has to take, like, a flagpole, like one of those, like, you know, like, ride the flagpole things down.
She Harvey Dangers down into the grass.
Well, what was that? Is that, what was that? Is that in Captain Marvel? That where it's, like, climbed to the top of the pole and she's just, like, pulls the pin on the flagpole and it falls over and it's, like, it's a lot easier to
be smart
than... I think
I was just thinking of the pole boys in
in Captain America. Sorry, it's the wrong Captain. I think Captain America does that. Like, when he's super skinny Captain America, he just looks at the flagpole and, like, I'll just pull the pin. But anyway... It's like that. She just gets on this flagpole, like, rides it down, like, hops over, like, three cars, jumps up on the cargo net. He's the one that's like, my friend just died. I'm all hopped up on rage. Give me my Harley Davidson, and, you know, I'm going to Steve McQueen my way onto this cargo net. So he rides all around the fucking temple until he finds a ramp, basically.
Yeah,
yeah.
And again, he doesn't really, like, ramp the motorcycle onto it. He finds, like, a wall.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Full speed onto the wall so that he just inertias his way onto this. And takes out one dude, like, as, like, one guy's, like, threatening the lady. I still can't remember his name.
He just cannonballs into her.
Just basically, like, spears him off of there.
Noriko.
Yeah.
And Coolio shoots the rest of them. So, basically, it ends up just Mark DeCascos, her, and Darren in the net.
Yeah. And Mark DeCascos, like, they all kind of end up, like, doing, like, the hanging on the side. Like, we can't really get a grip because we're all trying to kick each other off. Mm-hmm. And he's sort of hanging off on the front of it. And the pilots have been saying, like, we got too much weight. It can't take off. I don't know why they thought they could drag this Rolls-Royce
in
the first place.
And Coolio's like, you're not dropping my car.
Right. Even though he's shot it like 16 times at this point. But they basically just ram the car into the side of the temple with Mark DeCascos hanging on the side. And that's basically his ending.
He gets smeared onto the building, I guess.
Yeah, he becomes part of Chinese history.
Yeah.
So
deeply ingrained.
Yeah.
But then they find a construction site where they're building a skyscraper. And they just smash the car into the side of the building where there's, like, a net that it gets to get stuck in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're just, like, banging against the steel girders for a bit so that everyone gets rocked around.
I don't think this was intentional.
So with what happens, I think the implication is, it got stuck there. Mm-hmm. And then because they couldn't get it disconnected, that's what happens with the helicopter later.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But you don't really realize what they're doing, but it just seems like they're being dicks to them because they're, like, just... ramming this car against the side of the building. And so the two of them, this is Darren and Interpol agent, whatever her name is. I can't remember now.
Fucking goes out of my head the second you say it.
Noriko.
Yeah,
Noriko. So they end up falling off of the car and they fall onto, there are three giant panes of glass. And it's like, you know, skyscraper.
Like the site, like the building siding, you know.
Yeah,
like the
skyscraper plexiglass. Right. So it's not like they're going to hit it and it's going to start doing the crack thing, like, and not going to shatter. That's just, they're going to hit it. It's strong as shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
This stuff can deflect bullets type glass. So they land on it, but it's basically set up like a seesaw.
Yeah.
So she hits it first and just kind of slides. And it does the whole, like, slide the hands on glass thing. She gets hanging on the edge. And he's like, oh, fuck, she's going to die. Like, it's going to flip and she's going to die. So he jumps onto the other side to counterbalance the weight.
Yeah. And is like doing this whole, you know, I want to creep forward and help pull you up, but every time I do, it starts leaning down. So I've just got to go to the edge and stand there and hope you could pull yourself up kind of thing. And it's, I guess at some point, I really, this is what the part that is hard to understand at first, because Coolio is basically like, enough of this helicopter, I'm going to die for the car/cargo net, and does, and hits that, and then I guess we realize that they probably just cut some sort of explanation, like a cutaway shot of the pilot going, you know, or, you know, instruments going beep, 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 whatever, something just to, like, you know, let us know that this helicopter is in danger, because he jumps, and then it basically sort of explodes.
Maybe they just assume, right behind him.
They just assume that we know that a helicopter that is tethered to a Lakers-colored Rolls-Royce that is run into the side of a building is going to crash into the said building and explode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That old proverb.
Yeah.
Yep.
That old chestnut.
Yeah, but Coolio ends up on the car, and then he ends up on the
Yeah, he jumps down like into the center, and then kind of starts fighting between the two of them, like knocking them off of either side.
The scene goes on for a while, and
my hands were so fucking sweaty by the time this scene, like when I play an Uncharted game or you know Assassin's Creed, where it's like climb this, you know, 3,000-foot tower, my hands are just like, no, I know it's fake, but also.
Yeah. And the way they film it, like,
I mean,
it's so good.
It's a giant pane of glass.
It's convincing as shit.
It's basically like your perfect, like, magician's platform, because it's basically like, look, Ma, no wires. Like, you know, like, it's just a giant pane of glass hanging, you know, 30 stories up.
And I don't even know how they hide the wires on this.
Honestly, I mean, I think by 2000, we'd gotten CG enough that they at least could paint out wires. Because, I mean, there's one, like, shot where you can see Coolio's stunt person's jacket sort of getting lifted up. I think that really was Coolio in that shot, but also, but, like I said, there's a lot of ways where this could have been they could have had two sets. I mean, they could have had like a completely stationary one with in like a green screen type of room, so that they can just stand up there normally, and then, you know, some kind of crazy rig where all the stuff people go on.
It all looked on totally location. Seamless.
It looks
however great. They did it, they pulled it off really well, because it's except for the tight shots, it's all vertigo inducing.
And the thing is too, like, each of them keeps getting kicked off of the edge,
and
it's like they're scrambling because there's no grip because it's smooth glass,
right,
and so as they're trying to pull themselves up, you hear the and Oh my god! Yeah. Like, it's just one of those things that just works because you feel it,
right?
You know, you feel like the legs dangling with literally nothing underneath you as you're watching these people do this stuff.
Yeah, it's the human equivalent of the Itty Bitsy Spider. I mean, you're just like, every time they start to get up, like, they start sliding back down again. It's like, fuck.
Yeah, and at some point, he's able, like, he got kicked off and he was hanging on the side for a while, and he's able to get himself up while she's fighting Coolio, and he's like, you hear him yell, duck, and he does a fucking jump kick at Coolio on this platform.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which knocks Coolio off to the edge.
Yeah.
And then he's like, please, man.
Yeah.
Don't let me fall. I don't want to die. And they actually go to the back, like, so he has more leverage to pull himself up.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets up.
He's starting to. I think he's like halfway pulled up, doesn't he?
No, he gets up and he stands up.
Okay.
And that's when the Rolls Royce gives out.
Yeah, the cargo net or whatever that was holding it up.
Yep.
Up there.
That fucker comes down, hits Coolio, hits the glass.
Shatters
the glass. And
also sends Narika flying up into the air.
Yeah, it basically catapults her on the other end.
It's like the thing, what's that old Atari game where you're like, playing the circus thing where the people are bouncing on the I mean, it's sort of like that. You hit the other side and the old man flips in the pool and the mouse trap comes down.
Yeah. And because all the panes of glass have shattered from this, he hangs by his feet and basically catches her trapeze style.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically got each other's forearms and it fades out.
All is well. Credits roll.
Yeah. And
fades
the next
to gray, son.
Yeah, and the next thing we see is him at the airport helping the now widowed fiance. Is that a widow?
Is she widowed? No,
I don't know.
No.
Like, Back on the market, fiance.
She's no longer a fiance.
Yeah, she's no longer pre-widowed. Or,
the
yeah.
recently single yeah. other girl, Ruby.
Yeah.
She's recently de-fiancéed.
Right.
Or unfinanced. I don't know. Refinanced.
Recently single.
Yeah. But he ends up giving her like his medal, the medal that would have gone to her future fiancé.
Yeah, assume and it's her, like a purple heart, but
yeah.
whatever the dedicable.
So now
is.
Every guy who
her
dates
former
her
future husband.
Yeah, right? And so now every guy that dates her can be like, oh, what did your what happened with your ex? Well, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Here, let me show you this Medal of Honor that he
died
earned.
A hero for the police. Anyway,
yeah.
what do you do?
He was part of a strike force for this little place called, I don't know, China.
China.
So like what kind of graphic design do you do?
Right.
I do very dangerous graphic design.
There's lots of bullets.
Yeah. Is the most dangerous.
Ooh, executive consulting. Oh, wow. Yeah. You must get your hands really dirty.
Yeah. Yeah. But so she's gone. And then as he's waiting at the airport, then, of course, Narco shows up and they get sassy with each other for a little bit. Yep. And then they walk off hand in hand and
arm in arm.
And
tongue in tongue. And
yeah,
cheek to cheek.
Yeah,
tongue in butt.
Heavily implied that they will have sex later.
Yes.
Wait, they are?
I think so.
Huh.
It's what folks do sometimes.
This is
weird.
Sometimes folks want to stick their tongues into other folks.
Yeah. The subtext told me.
Did it?
Those people might have sex later.
The supertext told me that as well.
So anyway.
Yeah, that's China Strike Force.
Yeah.
All right, and then usually, as I described at the top of the episode, we usually give ratings.
We do.
That's the part that we do now.
Right.
If you can't tell, this is a good bad movie.
Right.
As in Robot Jocks.
Yeah.
An enjoyable
bags
bad movie.
Will not be an issue here. The only question now is how many of the positive jocks.
I can go.
Okay.
I am going to go 4 jocks. Stunts, fuck yes, 5 jocks all the way. It's not the entire movie, so it only gets 4 jocks. Because I just like, there's just too much repetitive Coolio and Mark Dacascos just hanging out, doing jack shit. Talking about the thing that they're going to do, and then they don't do it for 3/4 of the movie. And that's kind of lame to me. But aside from that, I mean, these stunts, like I said at the top, this is our shit. Like stuff where it seems like stuntmen gave their lives for this movie, that's our shit right there.
Mm-hmm. And it's BANANAS.
Yeah, all that, it gets 4 jocks from me.
This movie is like, I don't know, 74 minutes long. Just a guess. I don't know.
It's yeah.
Letterboxd says 93, but I don't believe it.
I don't.
Or 92.
Believe it.
I don't believe it either.
Although that might be close to correct. We started around 6:30 and finished around 8. But there's like a 45 minute cut of this movie somewhere that is fucking incredible and the best thing you've ever seen
stunts.
In your entire life. Yeah. And it doesn't
the stunt rock version.
Right. It doesn't waste any time with Coolio. I don't know if this proves out or helps prove out the Coolio principle, but he doesn't make it better. Even though he's mildly entertaining at times.
Yeah.
I don't know. He definitely makes it worse. But he's not.
I just love that they call him Coolio.
Yeah, I do kind of love that.
It's so dumb.
But there's a bunch of waste in this. And I am teetering towards a 3. So I'm going to go ahead and give it a 3 because it's. I think it misses like greatness by literally too many jocks. But just Coolio is grating enough and the interstitial portions that aren't stunts, I just can't get into. The dubbing is really not good.
I mean, that's what's weird is when it is dubbing, sometimes some people are their own selves when maybe they shouldn't be.
Right. Like Uncle Ma shouldn't
probably
be his own voice.
It's weird because some of his deliveries are great and perfectly understandable, and some of them are through a very thick accent.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then a lot of the stuff is that's dubbed, it's obvious they're saying English words, like the actor is saying English, but they do a poor job of dubbing over it. Like, it's 2000. We've figured out how to do this.
Yeah.
We could do it a lot better. So a lot of that just kind of kicks this movie around and takes a couple jocks away. I want to give it 4 jocks, but
it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It happens.
I think even a 15 minute less. So like, I don't know, 75 minute version mm-hmm. instead of a 60 minute version of this movie is in fucking credible.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to give it 3 jocks. I want to give it 4 jocks, but unfortunately, I've got to give it 5. Fuck both of
y'all. Fair.
There it is.
Yeah, no, this is my shit.
It's a very strange split for us.
This is my shit right here, 100%. Yeah. I don't... as far as I'm concerned, this completely disproves the Coolio principle. I mean, this is... Honestly, this is like Finding Bigfoot, sort of. a little bit. I mean, to a lesser degree. Because, like, Bigfoot could be anywhere, but it's probably nowhere. The films of Coolio were always out there. I could have watched them. Mm-hmm. So that's really just on me, is what I'm saying. I'm not a very good Squatch hunter.
You're not very Squatchy.
Yeah. But, yeah, nothing that happens that isn't the fighting annoys me enough that it doesn't make the fighting some of the best fighting I've seen in a movie that doesn't have the aforementioned Jackie Chan's mm-hmm. or Jet Li's or
yeah.
Donnie Yen's or, I mean, even Bruce Lee, even when they made 3.5 movies. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, it's fucking great. And I dug it a lot. And, yeah, I mean, the story's a little bit of a mess. And it's a little strange to be like, to have a story dive as close as this one does with all of the sexy time stuff to have basically no nudity other than some obfuscated breasts at the fashion show.
Yep.
You know, I'm just saying, like, this is like such an R-rated movie. I mean, Coolio drops a motherfucker, I think, at one point. He might drop a motherfucker, but he says one too. But yeah, so I'm just saying it's a little strange to like have that vibe of a movie and have it come so close and have such a thing of like, oh, they're sexy time, and it's just like, look, you got some side boob on Noriko, that's enough, right? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be a pig. It's just, it's always very strange when it's like you have a movie that's in this realm and it's just like, yeah, but we got to make it PG-13. It's like, yeah, but you didn't.
Yeah.
Like, also at the same time, you didn't.
Just go for it, guys.
You know, so anyway, but yeah, I liked it. I liked all the stuff, especially the fighting bits and the stunt bits more than the talkie bits, but the talkie bits didn't annoy me enough to...
It is a great stunt spectacular.
I have not seen a stunt spectacular like this in a while. It's probably since like the Raid 2, honestly, or possibly like the Night Comes for Us or one of those, maybe that's not the right name, but one of those, one of the other Eco Ways movies or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah.
It's good. I'm glad we picked it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Norika did the voice for Fiona in Shrek 1 and 2's Japanese dubbed version.
Well, that's good to know.
If you want a weird piece of trivia.
Okay.
Get on IMDb.
I think that's probably where he got it from, I'm guessing.
Was it in the trivia?
No, not in this movie.
You need to add it to the trivia.
I'll find a way to wrap it.
You were just,
wrap it back.
It's just listed in the credits.
It's just listed in her credits.
Sure.
I was closing the tab.
That'd be great, donkey.
Man.
I mean,
I just figured you guys.
I mean, hi.
Oh, thank you.
Hi, donkey.
Another Norika fact.
Also, by the way, there is
you one, are now subscribed to Norika facts.
There is one really good joke in this. So, like, we talked. We talked a lot about like Mark Dacascos and Coolio's weird racist banter back and forth, and like it's played very strangely where like you feel like at any point Mark Dacascos is just going to be sick of his shit and kill him
because
he keeps giving him looks like I'm tired of you saying things like you people and, you know, not understanding the difference between Japanese and Chinese and blah, 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 any number of things he said. But yeah, there's there's something where they have like sort of reconciliation at the end, and I'm pretty sure he says like shoo shoo, which is like, you know, like thank you. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and Julio's just like, yeah, bullshit to you too, or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or shee shee.
Well, yeah. There's also we talked about how the assassin got away. Mm-hmm. And when he comes back and he meets up with Julio and Mark DeCosta, he goes, yeah, man, well, you're good. Get out of here. And he's like, I need my money first, and then I'll go.
I think he specifically says bread, which is probably bad.
I need my bread. And Julio just goes, you want bread? Go see a baker. Blam. And then blam, kills him.
Yep. Yeah.
And he's like, he wanted to see China. He saw China.
Now he's going back by sea or water or something like that. Yeah. I don't know. Because he shoots him and he goes in the water.
It's not a well-written movie.
Yeah, no, that one's, I mean, because at least I kind of clap because at least always a proper one-liner, at least an attempt at it, mm-hmm. you know, kind of thing. We haven't really had anyone attempt that in a while. But no, that I really like the yeah, bullshit to you, too. It's just like, I don't know. It's just funny. It's one of the things that Julio said that was actually funny to me.
Yep.
Anywho, yes, that is China Strike Force.
Well, we got one official episode left.
Yeah, yep. I mean, you know.
And we got one mailbag episode left.
I was going to say, it's kind of like your last time for contact information, really.
Yeah,
I
mean, this is it, dude.
I'm not trying to like put you on the spot.
I got
to
sit up and dig deep, huh?
Yeah, I mean, this is your last contact information.
Yeah, and.
Because, I mean, I don't figure there's any point
in putting it. If you guys want to keep talking, I'll never do it.
Okay.
You can never do it.
Okay.
No, go ahead and do it. You should do it.
No. No, I don't want to, no.
And people should do it. People should do what you're about to tell them to do.
If you'd like to email the BAMFcast, contact us at bmf@bmfcast.com. Or, if you'd like to call in, dial 910-5JOCKS-BMF or 910-556-9263 on your telephone, cellular or otherwise. And if you'd like to join us in the Discord, where we have Monday through Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 24/7 discussions about all the things that you love about the BAMFcast and otherwise, send us an email and ask for a Discord invite.
Yep.
But please get in contact with us, because this is your last chance. Yeah. The last chance you have to save a life. And the life you save could be your own.
Yeah, you may pay for the entire seat, but you'll only need the edge.
And if you don't want it to be read on air and you just want to tell us something privately, just say that in the email and we won't read it on air.
Yep.
It will stay amongst us.
Yeah.
And
if you'd like a written transcript of the podcast, learn to write really
fast. We
might share
it with Truck. Yeah.
It's one of my favorite jokes ever.
Send a self-addressed stamped envelope too. I'm not giving you any of the addresses for us.
Nope, don't do it.
Yeah,
I can give you the old address.
It's 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Right.
Probably don't send whatever you would send us to 1600.
No.
You will get on a watch list, and it won't be good.
So take a letter, Maria. Address it to my wife.
I thought I made the oldest references this episode.
Jesus.
What's that from? The 60s?
1969. Somewhere around there.
Yeah, sure.
It's 60 anyway, or 69, somewhere around there.
You got basically 2 weeks left to get your correspondence in and have it be read on air. You have the rest of the existence of Gmail and or bmfcast.com to send in other correspondence, but we can't guarantee that it will make it into podcast form. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We may do a reunion in like 5 years.
Yeah, exclusively on Max. Yeah. No, Peacock. That's what we're going to be on.
Oh, yeah. Get us on the cock.
Yeah. Streaming exclusively on the cock.
Yeah.
BAMFcast reunion.
Can't wait to be on the cock.
On the cock again. I just can't wait to be on the cock again.
Oh, man.
There's your soundbite.
BMFing with my friends.
So let's get out here, shall we?
Okay.
I'm Harlow.
I'm Mackie.
I'm BJ. And this is BAMFcast Out. See you soon.